everyone, this is Yannick Silver, and I'm really excited to have with us another one of our Maverick 1000 members. And we're going to be talking about some really just up-to-the-minute things that you can use in your business right now to go make some more money. And, of course, you know, touching on all the three pillars. So with me I have Shelby Larson from Content Divas. And I met Shelby, you and your business partner Heather, we've met for several years now, just on and off maybe from the different internet events and things going on, and I've always heard great things about Content Divas and people that have worked with them on outsourcing a lot of either the SEO things or linking campaigns or article writing and content writing, obviously as Content Divas. But you know, Shelby, where's how long do we know each other for?
I don't even know. So it has to go back two undergrounds ago. Got to be two undergrounds ago, I'd say.
Okay. So yeah, I thought it was maybe a little bit further, maybe not. But so what I love about Shelby, and then I'll let you give your sort of formal bio. But here's what you know, what sticks out for me. So Shelby, you know, she is. You know, as one of the Maverick members, you have to share a certain sort of DNA. But so she does it in a great way. So, yeah, you're not a drinker,
no,
and we have, yeah. But we have you know, Chris Zawadowski, who's one of the guys who helped me here with the Maverick Business Insider and helped create it. He organizes at the Underground every year. It's become his little thing, which is the Charity Power Hour, where we decide to drink shots of beer for charity. And everyone puts in, I don't know, $100 or something like that to get into the game. And then we continue drinking from there. So Shelby is, like, all in. She's, you know, putting contestant stickers on people. And this year there's, like, a Peeps, I don't know, like these little fluffy foam hats that you're giving to people. And you're, like, weren't you like refereeing part of it? And
I was refereeing. I go around and make everybody feel bad if they don't put in more money. I wait until they get drunk and then get more money for charity.
Yeah,
I actually bounced a guy this year that got out of control.
Nice. Yeah. So we. So you know, there. Yeah. What I. You know what I just love about it is, so regardless of if you're participating in the drinking, which you don't have to, and I'm totally cool with that, and we have a bunch of Maverick members who actually don't do that, but you are part of the action, and I think that's a key component. And you know, maybe we'll talk about that when we get to the have more fun aspect. But so give me a little background for the listeners here.
Sure. So I've been on a marketing scene for about 5 years now. I originally started because I was a stay-at-home mom, so I have five children. And last year was the first year that we actually put them in public school. So I was home running a business and homeschooling five children for, you know, the better part of 8 years. And so it was quite the overload. And I was like a lot of moms, I just wanted to figure out how to make some money from home because being home with my children was so important to me. I started freelance writing, and a lot of people were asking me to write on internet marketing related topics. I had no idea what internet marketing was, so I went to a conference. It was my very first. What started it all. It was the Dr. Mike Wooming Howie Schwartz conference, and my eyes were open to the world of internet marketing, and I thought, you know, I'm just going to start this company outsourcing moms as writers, because I know so many moms who really are, you know, want to make money from home. And, you know, so here it is 5 years later, 300 people in our company later, and we're a full-scale marketing company and doing consulting and backlinking campaigns. And, you know, our strength is really in organic and local search and just really working with entrepreneurs to help them monetize their own businesses. And I'm really proud of it. You know, even when over the last 5 years the economy has hit us, or we've had, you know, maybe the business wasn't doing as good as we wanted to, we were still putting paychecks into 200 to 300 homes, which I just felt really good about that. That's always been part of my vision for my company, was to be able to provide that. So
that's pretty huge. I mean, 300, so
yeah.
300 outsourcers that you guys contract to, right?
Yeah, mostly stateside, right? So we have a team in Sri Lanka and a team in the Philippines that do some of the non-English related things, but, you know, 90% of our staff are stateside, and I would say 50% of that stateside staff is stay-home moms. So
okay, well, let's let's dig in. So we have a limited amount of time together. Let's talk about one of the topics you said that you've been talking about lately and been pretty hot is what has changed for 2011 to get some good organic rankings.
Yes, 2011 is a different beast for SEO, and I don't think the changes are done. In fact, I think they're just starting. You know, one of the biggest things everybody talks about is the Panda update, and I love the Panda update. That's my favorite thing that happened. A lot of people don't feel very friendly towards the Panda update, but I do because it's, you know, when Google makes these changes, they're making an effort to provide a better experience for the users, for the searchers. And the users and searchers are your market base for your website. And so, you know, when the Panda date is eliminating competition that isn't real competition, right? So the really true key to SEO in 2011 is content, good content. Article marketing, for instance, those articles aren't going to get on page one of Google anymore. It used to be a beautiful thing. Not only were you providing a backlink to your website, but you could also rank on page one for a keyword term that maybe you couldn't rank your website for yet. But because Google likes diversity, you could get an article on page one. So that part's pretty much eliminated. You're not going to steal any page one slots with, an article anymore. But the backlink still counts. But now it's easier for your actual site to rank, right? And there's all these amazing things happening that people need to take advantage of. One of the things I'm just now getting my hands in is the Google authorship. And when people hear this interview or read this in your newsletter, they should definitely Google authorship, because if you are writing content for your website or having it ghostwritten for you under your name or under your brand, you're definitely going to want to learn about the Google authorship markup, because what it does is it's an ability, it's a little code you kind of put in your website, and then everything that you publish under that pen name gets backlinked back to your author profile page on your website, which is really hot. And then when you do a search in the search engines, it's going to show your author page with your picture and everything right there on the sidebar and pull up all the associated content that you've also written under with that authorship. And so that is such a huge, amazing new thing in SEO that's a little bit of I feel like it balances the tables a little bit and brings some leverage back to true entrepreneurs who really have a presence and a branding and are publishing high-quality content on their site or even through other channels, and it brings a way for it to rank on the first page through that while driving those valuable backlinks to your author profile page on your website. So that is probably the newest thing I'm most excited about, is that Google authorship. So definitely people should check that out.
And so does that need to be unique content that you put on there, or is that, could you have your old blog posts or articles or whatever?
So that's a good question. As far as going back in and putting it in, I haven't even thought that far yet, but the really cool thing that it does is everybody knows that duplicated content is both a possibility online and sometimes a problem, also a benefit. So when you publish an article or something on your blog, people, if they like it, will duplicate that and put that in different places, and there's oftentimes questions about where that content originated. But when you get to flag it with your authorship markup, that changes that whole, it eliminates that whole question. Now Google knows who the original source is on that, and you're going to get credit for that when that's reposted, right? So it's a really smart, smart thing that's going to eliminate a lot of the duplicated content issues and where it comes from and who gets credit. You know, that's really a nice new benefit.
All right, what else could people apply, I guess, tomorrow that hopefully is not going to, be a quicksand sort of, or shifting sand sort of idea that we as soon as we talk about it, that, 1 month,
it
2 months,
changes.
3 months from now. Yeah.
Yep.
So that was all these things. So, I've never done that much SEO stuff, and maybe I'll talk to you about it at some point, but that was my concern with it always, was that, all right, we're going to do a bunch of work, and then the algorithm's going to change, and, I'll see you later.
Right.
Right.
And a lot of people have that concern. And the important thing is when you're doing SEO is to be thinking about long-term traffic and long-term ranking. If you're doing, you know, SEO really and truly hasn't changed all that much from 2009 to 2010 to 2011. It's just shifted the high quality SEO. Any of those, hey, we discovered this, you can do 1,000 backlinks through this tool, you know, that kind of stuff is going to come and go, work for a while, Google's going to see it, they're going to put their smackdown on it. But when you're doing true SEO and you're actually putting content out there, backlinking it and social bookmarking it and doing all the proper stuff that you're supposed to do, that's never stopped working. It's only gotten more effective. Now, with the Panda update, it changed some of your ability to rank independent content off your site, but it didn't change the power of the backlink to get your site ranked. And what it did is eliminate a whole bunch of competition. So I feel like now more than ever, you have an advantage to move in with SEO because a lot of those spammy results of people who knew how to get quick ranked with black hat methods before that could take up those ranking spots have been pulled out. And so it's left room for you with your, you know, high quality SEO work to move in. Social signals. Google is really counting social signals now. When someone a social signal is when someone retweets something, a link about you on Twitter or on a fan page, they make a comment about your website or about your blog post, or someone goes to your blog post and you have that little like button on the post so they can like it through their, or they can retweet it. Google's counting that. They're including those social signals into their ranking algorithm decisions. And so that's huge. One of the best things that you can do is go onto your blog and put on those little applications that have the like and the retweet this button. On your site, you can put the little Facebook box that shows different people who have liked your website, and you know they can just easily like it right there. Those are really intelligent things that you can do. I really predict, if you want my prediction for SEO, I see SEO completely changing to be all about the social game. You know, with the ability to have, for instance, things like authorship markup that allows you to absolutely claim your original content, plus the addition of people liking your content, retweeting your content, the plus one, the Google plus one now, you'll notice in your search engines, you can give it a little plus saying that you like it and that you think it's a great result to what you were looking for. Google's really taking heavier into account now what other people think about your website. And also to the opposite. So you'll notice when you do a search online now, under the results, you can have the plus one to say, yes, when I searched for car insurance, this site was really relevant to what I was looking for. But you can also say, hide this result, meaning when I hit car insurance, I don't want this result ever to come up in front of me because the crappy website has nothing to do with what I'm looking for. And that's telling Google, hey, this site sucks. This is not about car insurance. And that's going to start affecting, you know, people now are going to be able to let Google know, yes, this site's great, or no, this site's not. And that's going to affect your place in the rankings. And I think that's very interesting. It's a very interesting shift.
And have you, well, I don't know if this would be gray or not, but have you seen people doing any
gray.
Have you seen people doing any sort of incentives around, you know, plus one us on Google or whatever, and we'll give you this report, or, you know, the way, like, you know, with Facebook fan pages and different things, there's, you know, if you like us, you know, like Baskin-Robbins even, like us, we'll give you a free scoop of ice cream, or a lot of people do reports and different information as an incentive.
What I have seen are, there's a contest burner, I don't know if you've heard of that, Bill McIntosh owns that, and it's, you know, it's a really smart strategy, and what they do is people run contests, for instance, if they have a launch or they have a new website, they'll put it up on contest burner, and they'll say, okay, for however many, you know, people you get to click through this link, you get so many points. And however many people you get to like the fan page, you get so many points. How many people you get to plus one or whatever, you can make up whatever your requirements are. And then people win prizes based on how much, how many of those things they were able to get accomplished for the website. So I have seen it through things like that.
Do you recommend that? Or, I mean, do you recommend, like, sort of manipulating it? I mean, quote, unquote.
Well, I'm not against a little friendly manipulation.
I'm definitely
on the white hat spectrum, right? So I definitely believe in long-term high quality. But the thing that I liked about Contest Burner is that it's all different people coming. You're not, you know, paying a whole bunch of people with IPs in a foreign country, and you're not having the same exact people do everything all the time. It's true decision and choice, and people are clicking those links and doing those different things. So I don't think that incentivizing things in an intelligent way is necessarily wrong, especially when you're getting, you know, things started. But you're going to want to look for long-term strategies that will affect your site positively for a long time. But, you know, running a contest and getting thousands of clicks or likes to your website, I don't see how that can negatively impact you.
Yeah, people have used contests forever. Okay, anything else we should cover on SEO, or should we move on to, and you've got so many topics we can talk about.
I know, we have so many things. So, so I guess the nuts and bolts of SEO, again, loving social bookmarking, that's never gone away. If you want to know my favorite tool for that, it's Social Adder, Social ADR, and that's phenomenal. You should definitely check that out. My favorite...
Just there's Social ADR, like...
Yep,
like a cool
ADR.
web 8.0 spelling.
Yeah, exactly. Social Adder, and that's owned by Ben Roy and Kane Miller, and who also I'm very close with. But that's a phenomenal tested tool. Always high quality content, which you can get a lot of places, preferably from me, but you can get it a lot of places, and healthy backlinking. The biggest thing I'm also excited about in SEO is local search. So if you have any sort of local business, or even if your business isn't local but you have really competitive, high cost keywords, you should really consider going after those with a local modification. So meaning if you're going after car insurance, try car insurance San Diego and car insurance Chicago, even if you're a web-wide company, because A, you're going to be able to get that market much more quickly. You'll see if you do the research that there's tons of people that search for things localized, and the way Google works, that root keyword is getting benefits even though you're adding a geo modifier on it. So you're helping your goal in the long run while maybe getting some results in ROI on the front end by adding a geographical modifier. So I'm a big fan of local search.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I love that idea of taking it even if you got a national company or international company, but then localizing all of that's very smart. Great. Any other tools that you guys use or recommend that you think are worth checking out right now or have been especially impactful?
Let's see. I'm loving Social Adder. So we do so much manually, actually, with our company. We write it all and we post it. We post it all. I don't mind LinksBoss if you're doing some a little more gray, especially to feeder sites. I don't know if I would necessarily connect it to your main sites, but I'm really liking LinksBoss for ranking my subsites and my feeder sites. Obviously, Dory Friends, SEO Nitro, she has a phenomenal domain network that I think is really great for SEO, getting backlinks from relevant websites. And I'm also a huge fan of, for high-quality posting, you can do guest content at authority. Almost all of these authority sites accept guest content. That's a way, if you can get a guest piece put on an authority or a celebrity blog or website in your market, that's like server crashing, targeted people coming right to your site, right? That's definitely a great strategy.
Okay, great. All right, do you want to talk about, do we talk about linking, or do you want to talk about outsourcing?
So let's talk about outsourcing.
Okay.
I think something that people really are interested in.
You got 300 team members that you're keeping track of there.
Yeah.
I guess let's I've talked to a lot of people about outsourcing, and I've done a fair amount of it with mixed success. For me, it's always come down to I feel like I'm babysitting.
Yeah.
Or I feel like, I don't know exactly what to ask for. Like if it's something that's out of my sort of knowledge range, like if I can get somebody to build me, let's just pick something out of the hat, like an iPhone app or something like that, which,
right.
I don't know what what I want done exactly, but I know kind of sort of how I want it to look. So, you know, how do I figure out who's got the real goods versus, you know, who's sort of, you know, just going to put some crap together for me. And so I've had definitely some mixed bag results, especially with tech-related stuff. But so give us your, I guess, some guidelines there for outsourcing. Then we'll get into some maybe the nitty-gritty or project management stuff or different things.
Sure. So when it comes to attracting and finding talent, I think that that's always something that people struggle with, especially I think it's more complicated when you're on the coding side of things as opposed to if you're looking for writers or backlinking type things. I think it's more, people seem to have a more chronic problem on the tech side.
Okay,
and
so
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so you guys really just outsource mostly around the writing content pieces, not the tech stuff right now.
Right, so my company more runs around organic marketing and, you know, writing, et cetera, but I've had a fair amount of experience outsourcing the tech side for my own company. You know, I have a company with Ben Roy called Your Local Edge where, you know, all we do is promote local businesses for local consultants, and so we have thousands of domains, and that takes a lot of coding and upkeep, and we've had to really go through coder after coder to really find that help. And at one point, content, you know, we had a full team at Content Divas that did website design, and I decided to just take that out of my because it really is so complicated. But it's interesting. I've found some things that can help minimize your risk of failure and help you get what you're trying to get out of the project, some tips that can really help with that. And when it comes to attracting talent, this is probably going to surprise a lot of people that I'm saying this, but I have found, and I actually picked this up from Vishen Lakhiani, and I took it to heart and really tested it out and definitely found it to be true, is when I'm looking for talent, my ads, whether it's in Odesk or Elance or wherever Craigslist, wherever I'm going to post what I'm looking for, I focus more on what I'm looking for in the person that I do in their tech skills, because everybody who applies to make an iPhone app, let's say, is going to have some sort of skill in making iPhone apps. So you obviously have to assess that through the interviewing portion. But I've really gone to, you know, this is the kind of company, this is the kind of personality we're looking for, this is the environment that we use, we want to work, these are the hours that we put in, and sort of really put out that high level, higher level environment and personality request, because what that tends to do is scare off the people who maybe aren't at that level.
And this is even for like short term kind of projects, like project by project basis.
Yep, project by project
interesting.
Basis. Yep, absolutely. We were kind of skeptical when we tried it too, but it definitely upped the type of people that we were interviewing, because what it did is it scared off the people that weren't at that level. And then the people that were really high level and were sick of doing, you know, things that weren't as exciting, they really stepped up and wanted to apply for those jobs and really wanted to, you know, we ended up sort of with a little bit of a refiner's fire. So obviously in the interviewing process, we still had to see where their level was at, technically speaking, et cetera, but I won't ever advertise for outsourcers any other way in the future. It's definitely changed the type of people, the pool that I get to choose from.
You have an ad handy that you could pull up as we're talking, so I'd love to have you read part
of
it.
Oh, I don't, but you know what? That's something I could get to you to put in. This is going to be written, right?
You'll have a transcript, so yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, this would be great. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. When I hired my executive assistant, same thing. I didn't really put much about the job description at all. And you know, one of my things was I want someone who rocks, someone who can consistently work inconsistent hours. Well, you know, we talked a lot about our vision, my vision, and what, you know, my company stood for, and people that I got to interview were just phenomenal people. And then once I got those people in front of me, I was able to assess, you know, what their actual skill level was. And my executive assistant is just my best hire I've ever made. And so it's just a really neat way to do things.
And do they work in-house, or is that a virtual thing too?
My entire company. All work from home. So I would say my executive assistant is more in-house. She doesn't work for anybody else because we keep her so busy, but the entire rest of my staff you know, a lot of them work for only us just because they choose to, but they don't have to. They outsource and have their own other clients, but a lot of people end up just not even taking other clients anymore because they really enjoy the work that they get, they do through our company and things like that.
What's the culture that you put out there that you're, you know, when you're talking in your ads and so forth, like what kind of stuff is really big that would resonate with people?
So,
I mean, obviously it's different for every company, right? They have to figure out what their culture is individually, mm-hmm. but.
Absolutely. So for me, I talk a lot. I like high energy. I like motivated people. I like people who love what they do. You know, we talk a lot about, we have a team, we attract the highest and best talent of people who are the highest and best at what they do. They love what they do. We like to build our team from people who love what they're doing, their piece of it. You know, they can own it. And, you know, we talk a lot about how we work collectively like that. And, you know, so that tends to attract people who are more independent thinkers and want to be part of a team that's more high energy and goal-oriented and motivated instead of just, I want to get this job done and move on to the next paycheck, right? So they might have the same skill set as the person with the mindset of, this is just a job and I want to get on to the next paycheck, but they're going to be more personally invested in it. They enjoy what they're doing. They feel like they're part of a bigger puzzle, and we've gotten better results that way.
Okay.
Just the awesome. Mindset makes a difference.
Cool. So let's take our scenario of maybe I don't know. Let's forget the iPhone app thing. But let's say we're hiring for a we want an SEO consultant, and you know, mm-hmm. of course I would recommend that people check out contentdivas.com first.
Thank you.
But let's say that maybe they want somebody that is going to work, you know,
just
for them,
or
they
want to.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's probably a million reasons. So what do? We post up on Odesk or Elance or somewhere like that?
So I always start off, my suggestion is always start off with your immediate sphere of influence. So before I would ever go to Odesk, I would ask people that have businesses and business models that I respect who they use. Because oftentimes they'll have very good suggestions, and sometimes what's just as valuable is them saying, don't use X, Y, or Z, or don't use so-and-so, right? So like, the negative referrals can be just as time and money saving as the positive referrals.
Mm-hmm.
So I always start with my immediate sphere of influence. And then if I'm not drawing from that and I am actually going the ad route, one of the most important things, the biggest thing when hiring outsourcers is people have in their mind, they know what they want, or maybe they don't. Maybe, for instance, using the example of SEO, understanding SEO isn't the highest and best use of their time, so they want somebody that is the highest and best use of their time. They eat, sleep, and breathe SEO, but they don't necessarily know how SEO is supposed to work, so then you can't trust yourself to quality control it, right? So
right.
That's a little bit scary. You can't quality, you know, I can't quality control a website or a software being coded out for me because I don't understand the language that they're coding in, right? So I can't
yep.
quality control that, so it's a little bit more of a scary element. So The things that I like to do is, so getting what's in your head onto your outsourcer's plate accurately is very challenging because you may not even know how to present what exactly you're wanting.
Mm-hmm.
And especially working with tech people, they think completely differently than you do. So I'm a huge proponent of creating, you know, customer stories, right? So the end user, what's their experience supposed to be? You know, what's the end user supposed to be? What's the behind-the-scenes staff experience supposed to be? You know, creating those customer stories really helps.
Is that just a written thing that goes
yeah,
to the outsourcer?
I think they're called user experiences, technically. It's where, for instance, if I was having a software built, I would say when someone new comes to the site who's not a member, what's their experience supposed to be? If someone is a member at level A, what's their experience supposed to be? Member B, if my staff working support in the back end, what's their experience supposed to be? So this helps the coder understand, okay, these are all the different components that have to be built into this piece of software, right? So same with, you know, the SEO world. You want to understand, you know, what are you trying to accomplish with your website? So start with the end in mind. What are your goals? Because if you're branding your website, you have a brand new website, and ranking isn't as important as branding right now, the type of SEO you do might be different than if you're an already established company and you just really need to dominate over an aggressive competitor, right? So when I'm looking at SEO for a site, I'm looking at what are their end goals, what's the most important thing short term, and then what's the ultimate long term goal, what's their budget, and then that will determine maybe what steps we take as far as SEO, because you can accomplish different things. So I'm really big on communicating what the end goal is and also creating milestones along the way. The worst thing that can happen is for you to realize that your outsourcers are not on the same page with you at the end of the project. You've already got a month into it, you've already got a full budget into it, and no time to course correct, right? So creating milestones along the way and check-in points, not only does it safeguard you, but it provides an opportunity for your outsourcers to feel good and celebrate along the way as they accomplish these chunks instead of this big overwhelming project, right? Breaking it down into milestones, I feel, is super important.
Who creates those milestones?
So I would say you create the milestones. That exception would be if I was walking into a software, which, you know, I've recently gotten into the world of building software. Then that might be something where I would work with the outsourcer because they're going to know the coding steps that I don't. So that's why sometimes you're going to have to be able to collaborate with them and work with them to create those. Sometimes if you know the scope of the project, you can create it in advance, but I would definitely never outsource again without having milestones set up to safeguard myself, to increase the success of the outsourcer, and just make it a better project overall.
And where do those... What do you recommend for like a project management software or keeping milestones or anything like that?
So I really love Basecamp. There is a ton of different project management platforms out there now. I've been using Basecamp for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. They have a brilliant marketing strategy because at this point, even if I found a platform that was better, I've got so many thousands of documents uploaded in Basecamp that I'll be paying them a monthly fee for the rest of my life because it's so much work to pull all that documentation down and transfer it. So they have a brilliant model. But there's a lot of different ones. There's one called Teamwork that I'm trying out right now on a different company project that we're doing. But I've been using Basecamp for years. Also, frankly, Google Docs is pretty phenomenal. I've kind of created my own internal system using Google Docs that I work with my internal staff on, from everything from timekeeping to tracking, content management to updating where projects are at. You know, I'm really a huge fan of Google Docs.
So how does that work in tandem with Basecamp?
So with Basecamp, what I like about Basecamp is when our clients come on, they can have their own tickets. All of anything associated with their project that they have running through our company, including all the hands that ever touch it, whether it's a backlinking team or a video team or writers and editors and virtual assistants, they can all communicate in one place, upload every document in one place. And the other thing I like about the communication chain is if you post a message, it routes to the email of everyone that's on that message, and you can just respond to that email, and then it goes to email, but it also posts in Basecamp. You never have to do that thing where you're digging through your inbox trying to find that one email that had those instructions and that document attached to it. You know what I mean? You never have to play that game because it's always on the ticket in one place, which, you know, if you're doing a complicated organic, you know, marketing campaign over several months, there can be a lot of moving pieces in that. And so I really am a fan of Basecamp.
And what about... But you can keep documents inside Basecamp, and maybe I'm getting too technical on here, but we're, you know, we also struggle with this. We have Basecamp, and we're looking at some other project management stuff, and we also try and use Google Docs, but I don't think we're optimizing either one of them. Since documents can live inside Basecamp, why would you also have Google Docs, or how would you balance the two?
So that's a good question, because we've used Basecamp for years and years and years. We've moved to using Google Docs for some projects because it makes sense. So the thing I liked about Google Docs is I could give all 200 writers access to a spreadsheet. I can put projects on there. They could just put their name on them, grab them, and then upload the Google Doc and put the link on the spreadsheet. And so then on one spreadsheet, I could have 200 links that open live to live documents. You know, I like that aspect. I like the convenience. I don't have to download in between. So I still, we still, our main base of operation is out of Basecamp, but there are some conveniences with Google Docs. That being said, I guess if you're thinking security-minded, probably things are less secure on Google Docs than they would be inside Basecamp. But
okay, got it. So as we're outsourcing, do you think we need some sort of project management software or tool, or is that helpful?
So any outsourcing, no matter how big or how small, needs to be project managed. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that people make, and this is something I've been saying for years, people think of outsourcing as the silver bullet that's going to skyrocket their success to the moon, and it will. Outsourcing is completely changes, successfully outsourcing completely changes your scalability. I mean, 100%. But when you first start outsourcing, it is an expense. It's an expense of your time, and it's an expense of your money, and it's your job as a business owner to turn that expense into a long-term asset. And it doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen instantly. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news because people are like, I'm going to go on Odesk, I'm going to get a great person, I'm going to give them my project specs, and then I'm going to have million-dollar software running with, you know, clients flocking to it. And I wish that were the case, but the truth is, you're going to go on Odesk, you're probably going to go through a couple of different people before you find the one that really works, and you have to put the time into teaching them how to work for you, how to work for your project. You have to be able to manage that. And then what you're doing, if you're doing it properly, is you're creating a resource that you can return to long-term that knows how you operate, that knows the type of work you're looking for, you're familiar with them, and once that long-term relationship is established, then that turns into an asset for you because then you can turn on projects, bring that person in, it gets done fairly on autopilot, and things get moving and you create a system. But that's the whole point, is you have to create that. So whether you need a software like Basecamp depends on how many moving pieces you have to track. But there's always a piece of project management that has to be in place, whether it's through Google Docs and email or through something like Basecamp. And that's really where the golden arrow. That's when you can successfully turn the expense of outsourcing into a long-term asset for yourself. That's when you're in the sweet spot that people dream about being for their business.
Yeah, that's great. What things do you think people should look at for outsourcing first or second or third, or that, you know, just proactively what they should be considering?
Yeah. So the first thing that I tell people to do is to make a list of the things that they need done, just period, what they need done. And then they need to look at what their budget is, right? So some people don't think about making a business plan, but I really suggest people make a business plan. There's a reason why financial institutions in, you know, a traditional brick-and-mortar business require you to have a business plan. People with business plans tend to fail less, right? So I'm not saying you have to have a professional business plan, but you should have an idea of something. If you're going to outsource pieces, you need to have a budget for that. You need to know how much you're willing to spend, how much time you're willing to put into it. Once you kind of realize what your outsourcing budget is, then you look at that budget weighed against your list and you say, okay, what are the things that I'll take on this time because I don't have the money to fund outsourcing 100%. And then pick the things that are your strengths. If you do not love to write, do not take on writing. If you do not know how to build a website, don't take that piece on. And embrace your strengths because many of us, and I'm no exception, if I don't love to do it or it's not a strength, chances are I'm going to be worse than any outsourcer I'd ever hire, and I'm not going to fire myself. And so, you know, I could bottleneck my whole project, right? So look at your own strengths, take on what you're willing to take on, and then what you do outsource, you work within your budget. If you can only afford to do phase one and two at a smaller scale, do it, and then move on from that with a different budget. But you have to be realistic about that. I think a lot of people don't look at their project holistically and look at their resources, and included in their resources will be their personal time or what money they have to put in. And then the third thing that I would look at, if you're really trying to get something out the door and you don't quite have the budget or the personal time to make it happen like you need to, but it's going to be a successful project, I say look at bringing on some partners. You know, look at a partner that you might really trust, that you might want to share the project with, that has some additional resources in time, talent, or budget that can help get that done. So that's sort of my three you know, phase way of looking at.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Well, do you want to? Should we move on to two other pillars here?
Sure. My favorite part.
Yeah. So let's talk about a lifestyle. So an entrepreneurial lifestyle. You know, we talk about it for shorthand, more fun, but it doesn't have to be around that part. Mm. But it can be. You know, I always look at lifestyle from our business standpoint because we are the creators of our own world, and. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we, you know, our life only revolves around the small, minute time that we make available to it when we're not working. So tell me about, you know, I mean, you got five kids. You got a pretty full life over there. You used to homeschool the kids while running a fast-growing business. Talk about lifestyle or the ways that you create unique fun or experiences for yourself or people there.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I've had a really, you know, as we've, you know, grown in success in this internet marketing world, you know, I'm probably not your standard, right? Like, I don't think that most people in our market have five kids and are homeschooling. You know, I'm a little bit different, and so a lot of times what people paint as the ideal lifestyle wouldn't be my ideal lifestyle, but that's kind of the whole point of being an entrepreneur is being able to live our own version of our ideal lifestyle. So when I first joined the Mavericks, for instance, I was really nervous that, oh, man, these people aren't going to want me around because, you know, I maybe can't run off on all the trips because I've got to be here for my kids and they're too young and it's not that time or whatever. And I couldn't have been more wrong. I mean, they have completely embraced me. I can't believe the phenomenal people that I'm getting exposed to all the time. And for me, the freedom and the ideal lifestyle has just enabled me to make decisions based around what I want for myself and for my family instead of on what has to be done in order to get to the next paycheck or get to the next phase in life, right? And so, you know, for me, I really love traveling. So we don't have two cars because we don't need two cars, but I want to travel, right? I want to go. I'm going to Malaysia next week. I'm on 2 week notice. I'm leaving and I'm going to Malaysia for 2 weeks. You know, I'm part on a business trip, part on a vacation, and that's something that could never have happened if it wasn't for my business, right? So my dream has a lot to do with travel. And my children, Yannick, it's very disappointing. I am a gypsy. In my ideal world, I would not own a house. I would live in a different country every month. My children revolt. They want to be home. They want to have school. It's very tough. I don't know why I don't have gypsy children. It's very disappointing. logical children. So you know, you change your lifestyle based on you know what your family wants. But that's just been so great to be able to live a life where I have these experiences that I want, but I'm also providing the ideal life that my children want and being able to successfully balance that and blend that. It's not easy, and it's been a really fun journey learning how to do that.
And what would you tell somebody right now who feels like things are kind of out of whack or that they're, I don't know, or maybe they feel like they're working too much and not seeing the results that they want, and you know, they hear about lifestyle and they hear about all the different things that, yeah, maybe they should be doing or maybe they shouldn't be doing. What would resonate with you if you were going back to talk to yourself before you had things more figured out?
Mm-hmm. I would, the biggest thing that I would do, and this, you know, you hear this all the time and you really can't take it too lightly, the biggest thing I would do is take action. I mean, I feel like people get paralyzed by not being able to move forward because they don't know every little piece or they don't know every, you know, how they're going to do this or how they're going to do that. And you know, while I just talked about having a business plan, you absolutely need to know what you want. You know, it gets to a point where you have to dive in and figure it out on the way down. And that's been my experience, has been diving in and figuring it out on the way down, exposing yourself to the opportunities and the people that are going to be part of your journey and your success. If I hadn't just dove in, I wouldn't have met the Mavericks. I wouldn't have met all these phenomenal people that have influenced my decisions and my business and my life in general. You have to expose yourself to those things. They don't just generally fall in your lap. But if you put yourself in a position to be exposed to those people and those experiences, then your pool, your pool of resources and life expands. And so you have opportunities now that you didn't have before just because you didn't have any access to it, right? So you know, my husband, he's a big video gamer, and he talks about, like, unlocking levels. When you unlock levels, then all of a sudden you sound like you are really a geek. But it's true. You know, I feel like every time I'm going to these conferences or I'm choosing to do a business adventure, success or failure aside, I've unlocked a new level. I now am wiser and I'm smarter and I have access to new people and new exciting tools and ideas, and just expanding that world around me has been the most valuable thing that I could tell people to do, is jump in and expose yourself to those things.
I like that. I like the saying yes instead of figuring out reasons why you're going to wait or not do it, or unlocking the level. So I think that's pretty cool. And I've always, I totally surround myself with entrepreneurs. I absolutely love entrepreneurship to its core. That's why everything I do with Maverick, from working with startups to working with growth companies to companies and business owners in their legacy phase. I just love it because it also exposes me, like you said. I get the benefit of creating me being the connection point, and then that exposes me to even more things where it becomes the norm to go, I have friends that go travel off for a couple months at a time or went off for a year around the world, took their kids and homeschooled them, and, those are, like, normal things. It's not like I look at that and I'm like, oh, my God, how the hell did you do that?
Right.
But,
yeah.
Or it just, like you said, it opens up and unlocks those levels, so the more people can expose themselves to that, that's great. All right, let's talk about impact, the last pillar, and the ways that we can either create impact within our business, within our community, within the world at large. What's your take on that, and what's your philosophy?
Right. So again, this kind of applies to the last principle. I think that most good people have visions of how they can give back to the world or improve their world, and most people that I encounter, myself was no exception, they have these big, huge things in mind, these things that would make such a big difference. And what I've realized along the way is that Rome wasn't built overnight, and neither is improving your world. So for me, creating a company that offered stay-home moms income from home made a big impact. I get letters from people who say, my husband lost their job, we would have lost our house, I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have this job, I needed to be home with my kids. Or, heaven forbid, we had one woman that worked for us whose husband passed away from cancer, and, she was able to, go through that better because she had an income that she could do at home while taking care of her husband and going through that hardship. And so for me, just looking right from the beginning, and I really believe that this is why part of the reason my business has been blessed is that I've had right from the beginning ways to make life better in mind as part of my vision. It's never been only about financial gain. It's never been only about what opportunities it will open up in my life or my children's life. I try to think, what can we do that will make other people's lives better too, right? So that for me. So I would tell people, start small. Look for that small impact because they lead to big things. If you can build your success on things that make a difference, then when your success is higher, your ability to make a difference is going to be higher, right? They can grow together. And you don't have to wait until you're in that position to do that big donation to that hospital or that big donation to Branson's, child charity in Africa. You can build your contribution along the way as you build your business, which I think is a good way to do it.
That's great. Yeah, I love that. I think looking for small ways that within your business they can make that impact. How you have a quick example of how you've done that with the moms, or is it simply just giving them an opportunity to create that work at home income, or is it more than that?
Absolutely. So a large portion obviously has been able to give them a way to create work at home income, but also and that's affected their children because it's enabled their children to have their moms home with them. But the other thing that's been a really big impact through working with moms has been watching entrepreneurship spread down to the youth. So my husband's a scout leader. He works with the Boy Scouts. In fact, he just got back from a big 50-mile tromp up in the peninsula for a week. But they have an entrepreneurship badge. So I volunteered to teach the entrepreneurship badge so that these scouts who are motivated individuals can start thinking outside of the box. You know, they're our future, right? They're moving into the future for us. They're our youth, and and I know Mavericks are too. And you're personally very passionate about young entrepreneurship, and so I've really seen that by educating parents that can spread down to the youth that so many people go into high school or graduate from high school brilliant. They're not inside the box thinkers, and they suffer because of that, and they don't even know that there's another piece to their world because they've never been exposed to it, right? It all goes back to that exposure. And so I've really enjoyed watching that trickle down to, the younger generation. We can move forward with that.
No, it's perfect. I love that. Yeah, and you kind of never know. I mean, that's one of our core DNAs is at Ripple Effect, and you never know what's going to happen. I was actually talking to, do you know Robert Hirsch?
I don't know if I know Robert Hirsch.
Robert's one of our members out of Colorado. He works a lot with Mike Dillard and Tim Schmidt.
Oh, okay.
So Robert met. So he's in Colorado, and one of our other members, Cynthia and Frank Goldsmith, they found us through actually a young entrepreneurship event that we did in Aspen, where their son was like a superstar. He was 13 at the time, maybe even 12. And talk about ripple effect. So what happened was this guy, the boy, Garrett, who, he then got a scholarship to come to Underground, and he was with us, I think, last year, if not 2 years. And then Robert took him on as a mentorship role. And it's, just been incredible where, that ripple effect that I would never have predicted or could even imagine how it would have happened. A, the ripple effect that Cynthia and Frank became part of the group and, what happened to their business, and then from their son then becoming mentored by someone who's a very successful business owner who sold several companies and, just really, really high caliber, and they wouldn't have met without having this little platform. And it's just cool to see that kind of stuff, and just the same way that you're saying, giving the kids of the moms that work for you that glimpse into unlocking the level again, right?
Exactly. It's all about, for me, the entire ripple effect when it comes to all three pillars, being successful, having fun, and giving back, it all has to do with your level of exposure. And it's scary and vulnerable to put yourself out there. It's nerve-wracking, especially if you think you don't know as much as you need to know. But in all aspects, once you expose yourself, if you don't know that there's sushi exists, how are you going to taste it and experience it? And then your world's different now, right? So same thing in all three of those aspects. Once you expose yourself to those different things, you see opportunities not only for yourself to be successful, but also where you can maybe make a difference. And you become passionate about certain things. I've known people who use their business to sell products, to just take the proceeds of that and donate to a family that's having a hard time. I mean, you see needs that you can fill, and becoming the type of person where you not only recognize needs, but you search for a way to fulfill that is an amazing growth experience too. And just being able to not only recognize it, but be able to do something about that or orchestrate something that can be done about that is just a really neat experience, which has been
fun. Awesome. Yeah, no, that's great. All right, so shall we? So people can check you out and your services at contentdivas.com. Any other place you want to send them or tell them about a little bit more about the scope of what you guys do?
Yeah, so contentdivas.com, definitely drop us a line. We do organic marketing campaigns. We get your website ranked. We also do a fair amount of consulting, business consulting. So if they need someone to just sort of kind of come in, look at their marketing strategies, give them, help them make a new marketing strategy, suggest, we do a lot of that. That's usually one-on-one with me. And then if for local people, your local edge is where it's at. That's my current project of passion. I am so in love with the idea of people starting their own businesses and entrepreneurship, and I think that the average brick and mortar business nowadays needs to know how to monetize their online arm even to survive. And so it's been a project of passion for me to really work with local businesses and keeping them competitive online so that they can keep their business in the family that they've been doing. And so that's where I'm just really loving working right now.
And you've been helping other people help local businesses, right?
Yeah, so people who are SEO consultants, we have, you know, fulfillment for them so they can get the clients, and then we do the work to rank those businesses and work with our Google Places pages and all of that. Everything that's associated with local business has been my current favorite thing to do. I'm just really enjoying. And, you know, it means a lot to that salon owner or that pizza place or that insurance. It means a lot to them to even get one lead through their website that turns into a paying company. It's so fulfilling, and they're so excited. You know, online we're like, oh, we only got 5 sales today, right? But to the pizza guy down the street who has 5 new customers that come to his store, he's ecstatic, right? It's really exciting for him. And so that's been fun to be part of that excitement that comes with real-world business that happens to also have an online presence as opposed to a business that's only an online presence. Enjoyed that. So, yeah, Content Divas, you can find us. Your local edge, you can find us.
Okay, perfect. Well, Shelby, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Some great info, and I hope people got a tremendous amount out of it. I really liked it. I love the unlocking new levels kind of thing. That's a great analogy for us. Perfect. I will talk to you soon.